Hi, welcome to The Left Brain Artist. I'm Suzanne Redman. Oh my gosh, you're going to love this episode. Have you ever heard of the set of online art tutorials called 21 Secrets? It's been around for many years, and thousands of artists have taken the classes. I did it back in 2014, and I loved it. Well, I'm talking today to the creator of 21 Secrets, Connie Solera. You also may know her by her studio name, Dirty Footprint Studio. You'd think that creating and managing two seasons of 21 Secrets per year for many years would keep her very busy. But no, Connie does so much more. She teaches at wonderful art retreats a few times a year in Mexico, and next year she'll also be in Costa Rica. She also has an online course called Painting the Feminine, and she's done year-long mentorship programs. So let's hear how she got started and how she does it all. This is Connie Solera. Hi, Connie. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Susan. Thank you.
I'm so glad to meet you. I've heard about 21 Secrets and Dirty Footprint Studio for years, but I don't know the background of it. So I want to start out first by asking you, when did you get into the art world? Did you start out doing art when you were really young?
Yes. I am really blessed. I knew from the get-go, from when I was really, really little, I knew that I was an artist, wanted to be an artist. I think I had a little detour in third grade where I wanted to be an astronaut for a little bit, but that was about it. And then just always known it. Yeah. And I'm really blessed because I had a family that didn't quite understand it, but was supportive. So like when I was a kid, I got to go to all these extracurricular, like, on Saturdays, my mom would drive me up to the Cleveland Museum of Art, and I would take classes on the weekends, yeah. You know, and I had a lot of exposure to different things, even though my parents weren't artists. And then I was also blessed because when I got into high school, I got to go to a high school where you got to major in art. So I was, yeah.
What school was that?
It was called Valley Forge High School in Parma, Ohio.
In Parma? Yeah. I've heard of that. Yeah, I've got a Ohio connection because I went to college in Cleveland, and the Cleveland Museum of Art is just an amazing museum.
Yeah.
But go on. Sorry to interrupt.
No. I appreciate that. I love that. And so at the time, I don't know if it's still like that, but you could choose to go into art as a vocation. They had this vocation program. Yeah, it was really great. And I went into that, and I had, but this is what's really interesting is that at that time, I remember being in high school and like I had all the support. I had these wonderful teachers and I had the support of my family, but there was all of a sudden this pressure that you better find something to fall back on happen. Right. And I was like, shit, like I got to figure out what I'm going to do. If this art gig doesn't work, I better have something to fall back on. And so what I remember the most about happening in my high school years is like, creating my portfolio to go to art school. Like that was my dream. And I really, really wanted to be a painter. But I also kind of had this fear, like, what if it doesn't work out? Like, what am I going to do? And
because
I ended
they
up
really pushed that idea into your head, right?
Yeah. Well, especially in school, So they had me, I was in all the fine art classes and then I would take these commercial art, what they called it then. And it was just like, we had one computer. That's how dated I am. Yep. You know, that was like, and I just remember like having to do drafting, like do all this stuff. And it would be like banging my head against the wall. And I hated it. And I hate to say this, but I was really big into cutting school. But the thing is, the funny thing is I used to cut school to not go, you know, and be a hoodlum. But I would go to the art museum. I would go downtown in Cleveland and draw. And I would bring the stuff back to my teachers. And I would be like,
wow.
This was the days before cell phones. I actually used to go and call my cell phone. My mom knows now. I know she's going to hear this, but I used to, you know, call and be like, this is Connie's mother. She needs to leave school. And then I just walk right out. But anyways, more information needed, but I used to just really feel called to art. And, so I ended up after that going to the Cleveland Institute of Art, like we were saying, and on scholarship. And I was there for three and a half years.
Okay.
And what happened is that I really started to not only feel the pressure of like, I need to find something to fall back on. I started to feel like I don't fit into this traditional route of like just going and showing my work in the studios. And the interesting thing is I was pretty successful at that time. I was already having shows for my painting. I was there on scholarship. I was doing wonderful things. I was working at a gallery as a gallery assistant. I was working at the museum as an educator. So I had this great thing, but something inside me was like, this isn't it, Connie.
Was it a particular class that did that to you, or was it just the overall feeling of the school?
It had nothing to do. School was wonderful. No? I mean, it was okay. A fantastic education. Uh-huh. I learned so much. I really strengthened my skills. I learned what happened too is I remember going into art history and falling in love with different aspects of art history that were not traditional. So for example, like I was really interested in more folk art and all this. I was interested in this kind of intuitive narrative that I was discovering that wasn't available. And I was just something about the approach. So at the same time, I started teaching at the art museum.
Okay.
And one of the things I did at the art museum is because I loved art history, I started to research a lot. Like when you're an educator there, you would get an 8-week program, and each week you would have to focus on a certain gallery. So I would focus on, I don't know, a gallery, and I would find out all the like interesting stuff. But I mean, interesting, like, oh, you know, we would look at the Renaissance and I'd be like, oh, this Pope was sleeping with this artist. And I would tell, I was like TMZ of the art museum, you know, I would tell these juicy stories, and people were actually beginning, I was starting to get a waiting list to be in my class because I was I made it so like, and I was just all about like, you know, anybody can, let's just like express ourselves. And that's when I started to realize that something else was happening. But I ended up leaving the institute and I took a year off and I went back to university because I wanted to learn other things. And I got my degree in art and I got a degree in art history. And then I went back later and I got an art education degree.
Where did you get the art history degree?
At Cleveland State University.
Oh, at Cleveland State.
Down the street. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, the reason I ask is because I took art history. So I went to Case Western Reserve University, which is in Cleveland, and it's basically on the same grounds of Cleveland Institute of Art. In fact, some of the art students lived in our dorms, even though we were two separate schools. But when I had to take freshman English, freshman math, freshman history, I said to myself, I'll be darned if I'm going to take another American Revolution class or Civil War or whatever. Yeah. And so I took art history. And what was great about taking art history in Cleveland is we did tours at the Cleveland Museum of Art. Mm-hmm. And we went downtown and we learned about the architecture from buildings from 100 years earlier. So while you were saying that about your time when you were cutting school and going downtown, it was as if you were creating your own field trips.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So it sounds to me like you were just really ahead of your time and what you were doing compared to the formalness of a art education.
And, well, it was, and
when you said intuitive art and folk art, you know, those things are not, I don't know now, and I really shouldn't say this, but Cleveland Museum of Art is a very formal museum, and those types of things weren't there when I was there.
No.
So I'm totally getting what you're saying, that you were trying to look for the other stories and the other types of art.
Exactly.
Yeah,
And when I went to the university, it was a very conscious decision.
Yeah.
And I remember telling the dean at CIA, because I was on scholarship, and I had explained to him, I remember sitting there saying, I want to learn about geology and economics, and I want to learn about things that don't have to do with art. Because I was like really searching for a larger view of the world. Because I remember telling him that. I'm like, I feel that I need to connect more with the world. And I felt, as crazy as it sounds, I felt really isolated being in an art school where everything and everything was all art. And I remember when I left and I took a year off, I saw one of my professors and I was working at a restaurant. I was a manager of a restaurant. And he came in and he's like, so how is it, you know, not being in school? And I was like, nobody gives a damn about art. I was like, I'm like, I can't, nobody, I, everybody I meet, nobody cares. Because when I was in art school, every single person lived and breathed it, which is fantastic. And it was a great, but I had this hunger to know more about the world. I could see it now when I look back. I didn't realize that I couldn't put that into words back then.
Right.
So I was excited to take geology. I remember taking biology and doing all these drawings based off of what we were seeing in the microscopes. And I remember taking economics and thinking, oh my God, this is amazing. I can't believe this stuff exists. Like, it was so exciting to me. And so Cleveland State had like a liberal arts type of program where you could kind of put it together a little bit too. So that was really helpful for me. And what it also taught me that I see now in retrospect is that as an artist, you have to listen. You like really have to listen to your inner voice and it will guide you. Because here, you know, I went into art school because that was kind of what I was pressured to do. Because I thought that's what you do when you're an artist. Like that's the next step, you know, click, check off the boxes. Even though it was a great experience, I still felt out of place. And I'll tell you, I end up becoming, you know, focusing a lot on teaching, and I did a lot of teaching. And it wasn't until I started Dirty Footprint Studio online. I started it offline before, but once I started online, in 2008, that I started to find my place. I felt like I started to find, like, I could create something that made sense to me. And I wasn't just filling, doing, you know, that. So it, like, I appreciate you saying I was ahead of the time, but I think I was just waiting for the right technology to show up or the right something to kind of arrive to help me feel in place. So,
okay.
I don't know if any of that makes sense.
No, I do. It does make sense. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. When I went to school there, the CIA degree, the art degree, was 5 years. Was that the way it was? Okay. So when you say you left after 3.5 years, you weren't leaving just with one semester left. I just wanted that to be clear.
You
still had a lot of the program left. And so you really created, you had the opportunity to create your own program essentially at Cleveland State by mixing up a lot of different classes. What was the actual degree called that you received?
A Bachelor in Arts with the focus on painting and art history, I think it was.
Okay. All right.
I don't remember. It wasn't very fancy. And then when I went back the second time, I got that it was an official, you know, art education degree.
Right.
So I graduated and went back another time because what had happened is I was teaching at the art museum. I taught at the Cleveland Art Museum for 8 years, and I got to the point where I thought, I'm going to be in the public schools. I want to teach the masses. That's all I thought. And for me to get into, even though I had all this experience teaching, I couldn't get in without that little paper. So I went back and I went to get the paper so I could get a public school job. And then I got a public school job. And I just thought, oh God, what have I done? I don't belong here. It was like me being in art school where it was great and it was wonderful and I loved the kids and I loved the teaching, but I didn't fit in the system. And so that was another, I don't fit in systems very well, I think, unless I create them myself. That's what I'm kind of seeing in my own reflection telling you.
Right. It's great that we can, you know, have hindsight and evaluate our lives so well.
After you muddled your way through all that crap. But
exactly. Yeah. And I would imagine that the art education that you had in high school was so different than what they were saying that you could teach. You probably didn't have as much freedom as your art teachers did a few years earlier, right?
Oh, you mean like channels of where to go? Like,
well, the art curriculums have just decreased so much year after year in the school level.
Well, teaching in schools in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I would be in a school for a semester and lose my job because the levy didn't pass. Husband and I, we went on vacation to Arizona. And while we were here, we were in Sedona, I went on the computer and I looked up art jobs and it was like a mecca. I was like, everybody wants art teachers here. So we were like, we're going to move here. And it was literally like, I couldn't keep a job because I kept losing my jobs because the tax levy would fail.
Right.
And then I come here and I had 6 offers, you know, and it was like, you can choose. So that was really like, kind of a no-brainer. You know, and I remember being in college for my art education, and we had, you would be given a group of supervisors, and they would sit there at this meeting and they would say, do you realize you're not going to get a job? They would say, tell all of us. And I'd say, no, you're talking to Connie. I'm going to get a job. That's what I was saying. I'm like, I'm going to make that happen. But they would tell us, and they were true. They were right. You know, you couldn't, it was really difficult. I don't know how it is now in Cleveland, but then it was really difficult. And those who had jobs that were steady did not let them go. You know, they did not let those jobs go. And so I took that opportunity. I had to keep my word that I was going to have a job. But when I did get a full-time job that was steady in the public schools, that's when I just thought, I don't belong in this system. It's totally not what my values towards education.
This was in Arizona?
Correct, in Arizona.
Oh, okay. So you did feel that way. Ago. I gotcha. Mm-hmm.
I love the schools I love the schools I taught here too. I don't want to say anything bad about the schools. It's just me personally, it wasn't a good fit to be in a school. The whole like get kids 45 minutes and next one's in, and it was like herding sheep constantly.
Yep. Yeah.
And I had thousands of kids and I didn't know their names, and that just bothered me that I didn't really get to know them. And you know, and it was just it was a filler. Art was looked as a filler, and it just didn't go with my, you know, a lot of my values didn't align with the kind of overall education system. I loved the people I worked with. I loved my students to death. I'd bend over backwards for them. But, you know, I just got in a very short time, got tired of the bureaucracy of it. And just,
oh, that's too bad. Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, I think I did have time, you know, and now I moved on.
Right. Else. Did you move on to something while you were still teaching? Did you try to start kind of a side hustle, as they call it today, while you were still teaching? Or did you say, okay, that's it, I'm done, and now I'm going to figure out what the next thing is?
Well, it's always been in my nature to juggle a million things.
Okay.
So when I was even teaching in Cleveland, I would have like a part-time teaching gig, and I taught at the art museum. I worked in a studio. I worked as assistants. I did so many different jobs at once. I worked in the theater. I always juggled jobs. I love to do a bunch of different things. I don't like to just kind of, that was another thing, being forced into one system, that went against my nature. I was like, I need to be. So while I was here in Arizona, interesting you say that, while I was in Arizona teaching full time, I started working. I also did clay. So I started working in a co-op pottery, doing my pottery. And I would do like ceramic shows. And that's how Dirty Footprints started, I started showing my work in little, you know, ceramic, what do you call those? Little weekend fairs.
Little art shows, festivals.
Art show things. Yeah, festivals. It can be the word. So I started doing that, sharing my work in festivals. And when I worked in the co-op, every like once a month, all the artists would have a meeting, right?
Okay.
And I would always show up at the studio at night because it was after school, after I was done teaching. I would go to the studio and work at night. And the teachers, the artist said, you know, we always know when you're in, Connie. We always know when you're in the studio that night because we see your dirty footprints in the floor, because I was always barefoot and there's clay dust on the floor and you could see my feet. And I was like, oh, dirty footprints. I'm like, that's the name of my, you know, ceramic business. And so I started putting little footprints on the bottoms of all the feet of my vessels, you know.
Oh,
and
that's so great. I love that story.
Yeah. So it started that way. And then 2 years later, I just had enough of like, work teaching and doing ceramics, and I just thought I need to take a break. I want to do painting. So I started an online blog called Dirty Footprint Studio because I felt, well, that's the name of my thing. And I was going to focus on painting again and step away from ceramics. And I just started sharing about my journey as a teacher in a school, as painting a little bit. I wasn't doing ceramics at that time. Just started sharing and it took off. So I started that blog in 2008.
Okay. So that was an early stage of blogs, but that's when everybody was reading each other's blogs, and that's why they took off because there wasn't Facebook. There wasn't other things to look at. Yeah.
No, I remember when Twitter came out and that was a big deal, and that was a few years later, or a year later. Or so when it was a big deal.
All right.
Yeah.
And when you first started doing that, or when you switched and you were starting to do the painting, were you doing shows and festivals like you had done for your ceramics?
No, I just had enough. I was like, I kind of hit this point where I'm like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I felt like, what did I do? I'm in the school. I know I'm not in the right place. I couldn't figure out. I had all these pieces, but I didn't know what to do. I didn't have a plan to start a business. I just started sharing. And I felt, I'm a person that when I feel something, I'm like, okay, I trust that. So that's what happened. I'm like, okay, I'm not supposed to be doing the ceramic stuff. I need to take a break. And I literally just, you know, I was like, next month's my last month, gave up my space, gave up a lot of my work, gave a lot of my work away. I just kind of walked away.
Oh, wow.
And started doing painting, and I just started sharing the painting, and turned one of the rooms in our home into a studio for the painting, and really focused on that and teaching. And what happened is I also then started to, like, on my summer breaks from teaching, I got a video camera one year, and I just started making all these videos, and I didn't know what I was doing. And people started writing me and say, do you ever teach? And I was like, yeah. And I, in 2009, I went back to Cleveland. I rented my friend's ceramic studio space with her and another one of my friends. I put it online, and I had people from all over the country come. I did my very first workshop through 30 Footprint Studio a year after blogging, because I thought people want to come teach with me. And I didn't, and I wanted to go back to Cleveland, and I thought this would be a good way to fund it. And so I asked my best friend, who's a ceramicist there, and Christine Reed, who was my friend at the time. We met through blogging. And so all three of us put a little weekend workshop together. And we had people from Canada, all over the U.S., Canada, and one other country, I don't remember. But they all came, and I couldn't believe it. I was like,
that's amazing. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, so, and that's just from blogging. Right.
That was just blog. There was no Facebook. There were no algorithms. Yeah. There were no buying ads. But I will tell you, blogging became my hustle, I guess you could say. I blogged in the morning. I blogged in between classes. I blogged during. And when I say blog, I mean, I was answering, you know, people would comment and you would comment back. I was getting emails and comments. So it was I was writing blogs almost every day. I was connecting with other blogs. So I would go on other people's blogs and I was doing that, and I would, in my spare time, I was making videos. So I was making videos like of my art and stuff. And, so that's how Dirty Footprints Online started. And I started making friends, you know, like I made friends with Christine Reed, and we had that workshop. I made friends with Heather Pleth. She came to the workshop. You know, lots of Jamie Riddler became a really good friend of mine at the time. So, like, you know, it was really an exciting time. I'm lucky to have gotten online at that time, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a totally different bird.
Right, right. And so all of that was just you were interacting with your readers, because you were responding to every single email, any comment that they made. And not everybody did that. You know, they didn't work their blog that well. I mean, there was no good or bad. It's just they didn't do that as much. But you were interacting. And so they probably felt like they already had a relationship with you before they even met you. And so they said, yeah, I want to go to this class because I want to meet her in person finally, because I've been reading her things. Now, for the videos, I don't know the timing of YouTube. Were they placed on YouTube and embedded in your blog, or just in your blog, that's it?
No, they would be on YouTube. And if YouTube didn't have all those crazy algorithms and all that stuff that they have now, they didn't have ads and all the fancy stuff, you know. And YouTube, I remember putting it on my blog as well. And, you know, I remember people had blog readers. That was a big deal. I mean, I know they're still around, but you would get up in the morning and look at your blog reader like people look at Facebook, you know. And I just remember what I loved about it is that it wasn't, now we still tell people, but in these little snippets, there you'd go and read something and really move you, you know, and you might follow a handful of blogs instead of hundreds of people, you know what I mean?
Right. So and a blog post would be, you know, 6 or 10 paragraphs long.
Yeah.
You know, with lots of photos
And nobody was worried about branding, you know, there wasn't like trying to do, it was just like show up and share. And that's what it was. And I just shared my heart. I shared my confusion. I just was honest. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't know. This isn't working. I don't believe. And then I just followed the breadcrumbs because then, you know, people started asking. So after I did, I think it was after or before, I don't remember the dates, but around the time I did that workshop in Cleveland, I did my very first online workshop, and I never ever took an online workshop. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anybody who taught online workshops. I just had people starting to ask me, like, do you teach online?
Wow. So that was before anyone did that. Really?
Yeah. So I started, I created something that I called Art Journal Love Letters, and I made it on a Blogger, like, and I figured it out as I went along. And
oh, wow.
I charged $20, and I think I had 200 people sign up, and I couldn't believe it. I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. And every day people were like, I couldn't believe that people from all over the world were like doing my prompts and doing my stuff. And that's when I started to say, oh my gosh, I started to finally feel like I fit somewhere, you know, like I like found something that I could utilize all of my skills and my who
and
I am
passions
was, yeah. and learn stuff like, and it was exciting. And it was just like, so I did that. And after I did that, one of the ways I wanted to promote that Art Journal Love Letters is that I decided, okay, you know, I'm going to reach out to 30 different artists, and I'm going to ask if they'll do an interview with me, and I'm going to ask them 5 questions about art journaling. And so I found 30 artists, and I asked them 5 questions, and I posted one interview a day for 30 days. It was called 30 Journals, 30 Days. And what happened at that time when I did that as a promotion, I had like 1,000 people a day look at my blog, and I went from like maybe, you know, 50 people a day to 1,000. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, this is amazing. I couldn't believe it.
So you realized you had something. Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do. But at the time, the interesting thing at that time too, is like Tisha Moore had Journal Fest coming out the world. And there were these other in-person collective workshops in person that artists were coming to start teach at. And I remember seeing in comments on blogs that people, like, you know, they share about it, and people are like, oh man, I live so far away, I can't go. And this like light bulb went off, and I was like, I could create one of those online. And when I did, after I did Art Journal Love Letters, I don't remember. It was around the time Ning, there was a platform called Ning.
Ning.com. Yep.
Yeah. So I contacted all 30 of the artists, and I said, I have this idea. Would you be willing, this is what I said, to share one of your art journaling secrets on one page of a Ning, and we'll do it as a workshop, and I'm going to charge you this much, and I'm going to pay you this much. And I don't know if this is going to work, but we'll just try it, you know? And out of those 30 people, 20 of them said yes. And then you added me, and I had 21 secrets.
Oh,
and
that's my gosh.
Yeah.
I love that. I love
that. That's how it started. It was totally like a big experiment. I was like, I wonder if I can pull this off. That's literally what I thought. Like, can I pull this off? And literally each artist, like, I didn't know what I was doing. I just was like, okay, you get this Ning page, and you have this one. And I figured it all as I went along and put it together. And it was a huge hit. It was a huge hit, like, and it was the first.
More than you could ever imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. I made a crap load of money in one big thing, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is, and I can't believe this happened. And that's when I was like, I started to realize I can't be teaching. Like, I'm all of my time I would teach. It was like teaching was getting in the way for me from doing Dirty Footprints.
Yeah.
I was getting up super early and working. I was at school, and every second I could, I was having to build this, and I was never sleeping. It just became, so that's when I started to realize, like, something started to shift. Like, I think I'm going to have to focus on Dirty Footprints and let go of teaching. And it didn't happen that quickly. It took me, I didn't quit my job till 2010. So all of that I described happened between 2008 and 2010, but,
oh, what a whirlwind.
It was a whirlwind, and you know, and it was really exciting. You know, it was, yeah. And it was an experiment. And so I didn't think it would fly the first time. And so now I think the one that's coming out now is our 15th. It's our 15th edition that we just produced. So yeah. Talk about what a hoot, you know,
that's amazing. Yeah. So let's, Okay, let me, oh my gosh, my head is spinning. So can you give me some numbers? Do you remember how many people signed up for your very first 21 Secrets?
I remember it was $55. It was time limited. So what I mean is, like, they could sign up, I think, I don't remember the dates, but they was only got a few months of the content.
Okay. I mean, are we talking 100? Are we talking 1,000?
No. I think it was like how many people? Oh no, not 1,000. I think there probably was around 200, 300. I don't remember, to be honest with you.
That's amazing though. That is so
but
cool.
But it was amazing. It was, so that happened. And then at that time, I also then put out my own fearless painting online workshop. So after that, I put on what I called my very first fearless painting workshop called Big. And that was just, and that one I charged $150. And actually one of my students told me that she couldn't, like, people couldn't believe I would charge so much. But to me, I thought that was kind of cheap. But anyways, yeah. You know, but I charged that, and I had that was really life changing. Cause when I did my very first bit, it called Big, and it was a fearless painting online workshop. It was in the summer of 2010 because it started on July 4th. Because I remember this precisely, because the women I had in this group were so amazing. We just really bonded, all of us, and they really bonded to the content I was sharing them, that it was them that made me realize I found my place. Like, oh. I was safe. And I started that in 2004. And in 2010, which was Frida Kahlo's 101 birthday, I woke up in the morning and I said, I can't go back to school next year. And my boss was calling me saying, you got to get in. We have these meetings. And I went in and I said, I quit. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. And my husband and I, we had $700 in the bank. I had no business plan. I just knew. I'm like, this is what I do. And my goal was, if it doesn't fly in 6 months, I'll go get work in a coffee shop. And I will just keep working on this until I make it fly. And that was my business goal. And
all right.
And that's what I did. And it took off. Because it's like, I needed to get that out of the way. And then I just poured everything into Dirty Footprints. And
okay.
So these women, the best story from that is these women, I love them. We had this amazing experience in this online workshop where everybody felt connected. And I would do these live calls every week. And at the one, and it was a teleconference. It wasn't even the Zoom or the live streaming. And they were like, we all want to get together. And I said, okay. I'm going to have a retreat. And I said, I'm going to have it in Sedona. And I pull out my map and I'm like, it's going to be on this day. This is when we're going to do this live retreat. And then I was like, shit, now I got to go to Sedona and find a place. And it was like super hard to find a place. And through these very magical following the breadcrumbs, I found a place. I put it on sale. It sold out that day to all the women in Big. And I hosted my first retreat in Sedona. And it was so amazing. And,
So,
it's just, that was the beginning of Dirty Footprints. And since then, I've been blessed to keep following my gut and having it lead me to some of the most incredible women that I've gotten to meet in this life. Like, I work with the most amazing women. I just finished yesterday it's my fifth year of hosting Painting the Feminine online. And the women that come to this, like, are just, I'm getting all teary-eyed because they're just amazing what we do together, how we show up for each other, the work we do. And I could not be more blessed. And in a lot of ways, when you think of my story when I was younger, I just think that Connie, that she knew she didn't fit, that she was confused, that she was looking, because she gave me so much skills in so many different ways to lead me to where I am now. And the message I always want to tell artists is that, like, trust your process. If you feel that's not right, then it's not right. Like, you don't have to check the boxes off just because you think that's what an artist should do. And we live in a time that has so many opportunities for us connect with each other and put that voice out, that just trust that inner voice. It's guiding you. And my inner voice has guided me all this way. And I'm a big advocate for inner voice, you know, like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I thank you for explaining how you got from point A to point B, because while you're in the midst of it, you certainly didn't know what your point B was.
No, and I'll tell you, I want to be transparent. It didn't all happen great either. You know, there's a lot of failures, which we could touch upon is that, like, for instance, I now host retreats in Mexico, right?
Okay.
And I've been hosting them. I've hosted in 2007, I hosted four, or 2017, I hosted four. This year I've hosted, I'm going to be hosting the next, you know, I'm hosting four. And I think I hosted before then. I don't know. I've been going to Mexico a lot now, but the first time I ever put my Mexico retreat on, nobody bought it. You know, I have handfuls of retreats I put on there that nobody bought. And I will tell you, like, when I went to Sedona that first time, the lady's like, okay, you want to have it on this date? You know, we need $1,000. And I was like, oh my God, my husband and I are looking at each other. We're like, that's like our savings plus some, you know? So we were like, I was like, let's do it, you know, and I figured it out and I just did. I took a risk. And like every time I do these things, I take a risk and I've put money up and not got money in return. So I don't want anyone to think that, because I think some people think if they fail that there's something wrong. And because I fail in that sense, I don't ever look at it as a fail. I look at it as a pivot, like, OK, now we're going to go this direction.
Try something else. Yeah.
Let's figure out that's not supposed to happen now. OK, we'll just trust that, you know, and it's a risky, you have to, I feel like for myself, it's really a great career choice because I like to be on that relationship with risk. Like it gets me creatively, energized, I think, you know?
I've never heard it put that way. A relationship with risk. That's amazing because a lot of people they're turning the opposite direction away from risk. So yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I think it's just finding your relationship with it. And I think, as you know, as an entrepreneur, you're in constant relationship with it. Everything you do from what you put out is risking something. If it's not your vulnerability, if it's not risking finance, time, energy, whatever it is. But generally, I think that's what we do as entrepreneurs. We learn how to get in relationship with risk.
Right, right. And I think it sounds to me like you weren't talking to other people and saying, do you think I can do this? Because the minute you say that, and that's different, but the minute you say that and somebody says, oh no, that's crazy. Oh no, you can't do that. Oh, you'll put yourself in debt. You may lose your house. No, you can't do that. You're not going to do it. But I think you did a lot of things where you were working on your own and just trusting your instinct and you weren't allowing other people to, or you weren't asking them to put their opinion in there. And I think as women, we always are looking for validation and looking for other opinions. I think you skip that part.
Well, what I do, I have a process and I share this with, I have a mentoring program called Ignite and I share this process with the women. And this is the thing that has helped me the majority of my life. Even as a kid, I kind of did this in a form. So like, for example, I remember on that July 10th before I, or not July 10th, 2010 on Frida Kahlo's birthday, which is July 6th, excuse me. On July 6th in 2010, I remember that day I quit my job. I woke up in the morning and I took my journal and I wrote down, what is the most incredible dream I can dream of leaving this job? And I wrote that down. And then I wrote, what is the most absolute worst thing that could happen? And I wrote it down. And I said, and then I wrote, and what will I do if that happens? And I started to write that. And I just started to have that plan. And every time I do something that's expansive, because I keep, it seems like now it's spent more than ever being an entrepreneur, that I'm constantly coming up to those areas where I have to expand. I constantly have to do that. I have to dream the biggest dream, and then I have to dream the biggest disaster, and then I have to come with my plan. And that plan that I get from the disaster is what makes me always go, okay, you can do this. You could get through this. Like, if the worst of the worst happens, you're going to be okay, because you already got a plan. And that's what always helps me. And I find for myself that in truth, there is a small handful of people I do ask. I have to have those people, but I trust them. And they're people that I trust because I feel that A, they're further along than me. B, they're honest with me. They'll tell me straight up, you know, and they might not tell me I can't do it, but they might ask me to look in areas I'm being blinded. And so I do, and I think it's important as women to have, as I like to call it, like a peer counsel or wisdom counsel of people that you trust. But I am a firm believer in not going to the masses and being like, should I do this? Or do I think that? I will always check in with myself first. And I constantly believe in my gut has not led me wrong. It's led me into uncomfortable places. It's led me into things that look like failures, but it's never led me the wrong way. And I trust that more than anything.
That's
which
wonderful.
Is scary sometimes, but true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, let me, let's go backwards a little bit and can you explain how 21 Secrets works for people who are listening and they don't understand the concept of an online class. They don't understand what are the nuts and bolts when you are purchasing 21 Secrets?
Well, 21 Secrets is an online art journaling and mixed media e-course. And okay. This e-course comes out every spring and fall. And this year, thanks to the wonderful addition of Tanya Jenny, who you had on your show a little while back. She's the 21 Secrets creative director and course manager. And through her, we welcomed in a new program. So now 21 Secrets comes out every spring, fall, and summer. It's really exciting. So, but the spring and fall are a little different than the summer. So in the spring and fall, if you sign up for the e-course, what you will receive is a downloadable ebook, usually anywhere from like 150 to 200 pages. But in this ebook, it's separated into chapters. Each teacher who is a talented artist, and we've had amazing, I've had now over 300 artists teach for 21 Secrets. They get a chapter all dedicated to them. So we always have a theme. So the one that's coming out on October 29th is paper, glue, scissors. And that theme is all around collage. So each teacher is creating, sharing their secret in a sense about art journaling or mixed media in regards to collage. And so if you take this online course and you're new to it, what you will automatically see is you will feel overwhelmed because there's 21 different things to choose from. And so our goal is for you to just either work your way through from beginning to end or just kind of pick what calls to you. And you, the teachers present both written content and videos as well as photos and sometimes templates to share a lesson. So it gives you the feel of actually being in an in-person workshop with them from the comfort of being at home in your own home or in your studio. So they present a lesson, some techniques, and then an invitation usually around like, now we're going to use these techniques and to create this theme or this invitation or let's explore this prompt. And so by the end of each lesson, you will have usually a finished piece, and some new skills or a new approach or a new way of looking at your creativity, from a diverse variety of teachers. Even though the theme might be the same, each teacher has a different approach to it. And one of the reasons I really love that is because I feel, we're all unique as artists and we can learn from people that are different from us, as well as we can find the people that we really vibe with. And it's all kind of put them all together into a nice little stew. And our summer program is a little shorter. There's two programs in the summer and they're each 10 days. And each day in that 10-day period, you receive an email with three really short videos. And it's to kind of help you incorporate and keep your creative practice going during the summer, because in the summer it can be so busy. So each teacher creates this kind of little shorter condensed lesson so that you can just give yourself an hour every day, maybe before everybody gets up or later at night, to just kind of, you know, play around in your art journal or in your mixed media, just to keep connected to your creative practice. Because I feel that now more than ever in our world, our creative practice, especially as an artist, is what roots us, what keeps us grounded, can keep us sane, can relieve stress. You know, even if you don't have an intention or a calling to be an artist, art journaling and mixed media is a wonderful way of, you know, letting go of stress, expressing yourself, being able to just kind of escape the realities and responsibilities of the world for a little while and play with color and enjoy your creativity. So that's what 21 Secrets brings to the table, an option for artists to learn and build their skills, as well as people that might not be interested in following art as a vocation, to, you know, get to play with their creativity and make some fun stuff. So
I love that. Yeah. Thank you. And what's great about the fact that you're making it art journaling based is that you're not saying to them, I'm going to show you a technique and you're going to put it on a canvas, for example, because a canvas can be very intimidating to somebody who does not call themselves an artist. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say that everybody is an artist in some way, but there's that category of people who just don't call themselves artists. And so they'll get intimidated. But if you say, we're going to do it in an art journal, so just go out and buy a blank book, and it can be any size. It can be thick paper. It can be thin paper, whatever you want. And the fact that because it's in a book, you can shut the book when you're done. Mm-hmm. And you can mm-hmm. shut it and put it away, and nobody else can see it except for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that enables people to be a little more brave about making art, because you've given them that option to shut the book instead of having a canvas or something big, something, you know, 2 foot by 3 foot. No, it's just a little page. It's a little book. And the other thing that I love is, because there's 21 secrets, there's no pressure. Nobody says you have to do all 21 of them. So you can do one of them and say, yeah, it's not for me. Or you can do one of them and say, yeah, I really like this artist. Let me research this artist a little bit more and let me look them up on Instagram and find out. And maybe this artist teaches more classes and I want to take something else from them. Or maybe I'm just really methodical and I want to go through secret number one and then two and then three and then four.
Right. And we give you lifetime access, so you can take, and most people take long time to go through it and come back. And some people come back to the lessons, you know, a few times, like maybe after a year, they want a refresher or be re-inspired. And another aspect that I forgot to mention is that 21 Secrets comes with a little private Facebook group. So you can also see what your peers are doing if you want to, or share and get feedback and get support and also ask questions and all of that wonderful stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually did 21 Secrets quite a few years ago. I can't remember what year it was, but, so I'm a member of the Facebook group, and it's fun when you're going through it. And let's say it's a, you know, a technique to draw a flower. And then you see all these other versions of it, and you think, I would never have made my flower like that, like so-and-so did on this Facebook page. But it's amazing, and it just kind of opens up your creativity more when you look at it and you say, okay, there's 100 women out there who are doing the same step-by-step process, and yet we've come up with 100 different end products and, you know, 100 different pieces of art. And that's what I always thought was amazing, because I, you know, despite, you know, you would never say, especially the people who don't call themselves artists, that you have a color palette, you have, you know, favorite colors or a color scheme. You just say, well, no, I make art. But then when you look at it and you say, oh, yeah, I guess I do have a color scheme because this person used purple and I never would have used purple.
Yeah.
This person used green. Yeah. So I love the Facebook community. I love that people can go back, and even if they don't feel brave enough to contribute their own work on a post on the Facebook page, they can still look at everybody else's and kind of get some you can get feedback, for one, if you do post, but you can just get some neat ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things too, I think, is kind of fun about 21 Secrets is there's a lot of beginners. So it gives them that first feel of what it feels like to share their work with people who are going to appreciate it or give them feedback. Because a lot of times, especially I see with beginners, you do it at home and your family's kind of like, what's that? And you're already feeling, you know, a little wobbly in your confidence around it. And then you have your family kind of peeking over your shoulder. So it provides a nice space to be with your kindreds and show, and people are like, yay, instead of that kind of wobbly feeling you might get with people in your own life too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really encouraging. Yeah. So
So
that's great. So 21 Secrets, you called it an e-course, or I think maybe you said it's a book, an e-book. So basically when you pay for it, you get it and then you own it. So you can go back to it 5 years from now if you want, because you own the material. Okay.
Yeah. It's all yours. You just have to download it into your computer or device. And, and you know, there's close to like 25, 30 hours of video, just instruction, you know, I mean,
right.
It's something that you don't take and just finish in a weekend. It's something for you. It's, I look at it, as I say on the sales page, it's a resource. It's something you can keep coming back to and something you can use, you know, to learn new things and to, like I said, to experience, like when you just want to, you know, have a de-stressor and
right.
some joy in your yeah. life.
Or if you feel a little creatively blocked,
yeah.
you know, just
yeah.
go and look at one and say, okay, I'll try that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. great. So, you know, just looking at or hearing you say that you've got the spring and you've got the fall and now you've got the two things in the summer, I would think that 21 Secrets would take all of your time all year. But mm-hmm. obviously it doesn't because you're such a multitasker. You do so many things. So have we touched upon everything that you do? You're going to Mexico four times a year. Are you still doing workshops in Sedona as well?
I also do another retreat next year. Will be in Costa Rica as well.
Oh, wow.
That I have one coming in March in Costa Rica. I have another one. I have one more in Oaxaca, Mexico in January. So I leave. I have two this November 2018 in Oaxaca, one in January. Then I go to Costa Rica in March. I don't want to say, but there possibly might be Sedona coming back. But I know if I say that, I'm going to receive a lot of emails from some of my students.
Okay.
So, and I have not confirmed those yet. So
yes.
I don't want to put that out there. But I really, really love, Mexico and I really love Costa Rica. My husband is Costa Rican and I have a deep, deep love for Costa Rica. And so I like to go to places where I feel really, really connected to the people and to the culture. And so, I'm enchanted with Oaxaca, Mexico. Like I couldn't even tell you. And next year will be, I also host a program called Painting the Feminine. And so haven't made this announced yet. So we'll make it on here on your
All
wonderful
right.
podcast, but it was supposed to be the last year this year, but, this past session that just ended yesterday really showed me, that it needs to keep going strong. So I'm going to keep moving with that next year. So Painting Feminine will be next year in 2019.
And is that a live workshop or is that online?
It's an online workshop.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an online, it's a 4-week course. It's much different than 21 Secrets. It's really to help women, especially women artists, kind of understand their visual language, their intuitive narrative when they create, and to really kind of, we create a body of work in the 4 weeks, a body of artwork based on what we believe feminine energy is. Our feminine wisdom. So not like what it means to be a woman, but like what is a feminine energy? Like what is, we look at different things like vulnerability and transparency and intuition and collaboration. And how does that show up in our work and our lives? And how do we bring that into our pieces? And then what do the pieces have to tell us? So there's a lot of, it's really, I would say kind of a spiritual practice more than anything.
Okay.
It's a really wonderful course and I've been doing it for 5 years and I thought this year was going to be the last, but after this last one, especially with a lot of the things happening socially and politically, it just was so impacted that this needs to keep going. So I'm going to do it next year.
Are you the only instructor for that or are there others? Okay.
I'm the only instructor and it's storytelling. So, we meet on Mondays. We always meet live on Mondays on a live stream and we gather and we have a discussion around something for that topic of that week. And in 3 days, they receive a little podcast audio from me where I tell a story. And then on the last day, we have what I call studio visit. And I bring them in my studio via video, obviously,
right.
and share with them techniques that I use. And one of the big intentions of this workshop is to understand your creative daily practice and to kind of establish it. And so we do that. And I also teach for the last 7 years, I taught a year-long mentoring program called Ignite. And this year coming up, I'm taking a sabbatical because I am writing a book, which Tanya Jade.
That's
Jade
wonderful.
Helping me. Yeah,
right.
So you're, she's my little book coach.
You're working with the best.
Yeah. So
oh my goodness, that's great. This is your first book?
this is going to be my first book, and it's going to be about painting the feminine, so which exciting. Is another thing that was kind of a surprise. But Tanya helped me figure that out. I thought it was going to be about Ignite because I was taking a sabbatical from it. But Tanya, through her wonderful guidance and over Mexican food, we came to the realization that it needs to really be about painting the feminine. And even being in Painting the Feminist last session with my women, I told them first, I'm like, you're good. Listen, I'm writing it about this, and it will incorporate my art along with writing. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. I'm so excited. And I feel I've never, ever, ever wanted to write a book. And now I'm just so jazzed about it. I get up every day and I'm like, ooh, I'm writing a book.
Oh, so, wow. You
know, so it's really exciting. Yeah.
That's
so
wonderful.
I do that. I think that's all I do.
Okay.
I do a lot, but I'm learning how to delegate better and welcome in more help. So
okay. Hence you're working with Tanya Jenny.
I work with Tanya Jenny.
Yeah. She's helping you with 21 Secrets. And let me go back to the Mexico retreat, because you said you that's one of your constants, that you're doing it next year, and you still have some coming up this year, but then you have January is starting the new 2019 ones. Mm-hmm. For those retreats, are you having a cultural tour component in addition to doing art?
Oh,
tell me about, what kind of things do they do to get to learn about Oaxaca while they're there?
Ooh, thank you for bringing up Oaxaca, because I love it. Well, my retreat is called Paint Fearless Mexico. And so it's 1 week long. You will, depending on when you come. So next year I have one in January that still has two spaces as I speak.
Right.
And then in January of next year, my November ones go on sale. I do two in November every year. So like this year I'll be going for my November ones. But what happens is we gather for 1 week. And in that week, we do a lot of painting. It's held at Art House Oaxaca. And Art House Oaxaca is directed by Lisa Sonora, who's, I'm not sure if you're aware of her. She's an American expat living in Mexico. She's an artist.
I know herself. That name. Yeah.
Yeah. She's the director of of Art House Oaxaca. She lives there too. It's her home, but she has a kind of wonderful little, like I call casitas, like little, rooms. So there's five rooms. I bring 10 women, 10 painters, my fearless painters. You each share a room. You have your own bathroom, but you share it with a roomie. And we have a wonderful outdoors, gorgeous little studio. So we do a lot of painting. I take you on, because I know that city now, like the back of my hand. So I take you on a walking tour of like all the juicy places to see all the juicy art. And Oaxaca, is kind of like, it's a hub. It's like a main spot for murals. So we see a lot of murals.
Oh, and
it's
also
it's so good.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
And there's graphic art. So like printmaking is really, really big there because it's a very political city. So it started, printmaking started with all those posters, the woodcuts and all that. So there's a lot of woodcut posters even on the walls that are just gorgeous and are like textured and coming off and so wonderful. So you also have that. And then there's a lot, it's seeped in traditional art. So there is a lot of textiles, the gorgeous embroideries, the gorgeous fabrics. You can find all that. We go look at that. There's, what I take my women to is in, and one of the days we actually go out, into a village, and this village is completely inhabited by traditional artisans who do abarrijes. And abarrijes are those traditional, if people can't see it, but traditional, wood carvings that are painted. And most of them are.
Oh, yeah. You see those. Like for Day of the Dead.
Yeah, absolutely. So we go and we go to this studios of where the artists create it, and we get to learn how they use natural pigments. So one of the artists always shows how they use like pomegranate to make certain pigments and all the different. And we visit one of the studios where you can see where they learn. A lot of the students come to learn that. So we do that. We go visit. It's called the monastery, the ex-monastery, and it's kind of a ruins. And so we go see some really wonderful ruins. We do, some little places in town like that. So we do a few of those kind of cultural things, but most of it is painting. We spend a lot of time painting, and we go to the Oaxacan Painters Museum, as well as I take you to some of the contemporary painting galleries too. So we see a lot of, what I love is that we see the traditional work that's been happening forever and that has really seeped in their culture, as well as we see a lot of the political work that's happening.
Okay.
And we also see a lot of the work that is contemporary kind of fine art even, because that's rich in that city as well. And then just the city itself is unbelievably alive all the time.
Oh, wow.
You know, you go out on a, like in the evening, it comes out alive and you have food vendors, you have people dancing, there's music almost every single night. There's just so much aliveness and community that it's just wonderful. And the buildings are gorgeous. And I love that city. It's just drenched in inspiration for an artist. And one of the things I try to do at these retreats is create this wonderful cocoon for my painters to come in and dive deep into their work. So I'm very strategic and protective of when we go out of our little cocoon and visit the city, so that we can still keep our practice and that kind of reverence around the work we're doing, this really deep dive into our creativity going. So there's a balance between the two, definitely. But we lean a lot towards, you know, really nourishing our artist soul. That's what it's really about for me. And I think the benefit of going to somewhere away and somewhere is that we become like pilgrims. We have to make a pilgrimage somewhere. We have to, you know, leave our life behind so we can kind of let everything go and step into that magical part of our creative process. And so I have this wonderful honor of ushering women through that. And then I get to take them out and say, look at this, look at that, you know, look at this, look how amazing this is. And then we go back to our little warm cocoon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, your enthusiasm is just coming through. No wonder you love going back there all the time. That's so great.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And, you know, and I feed them. We eat amazing food.
Yeah.
You know, and we get to also, the meals all included for breakfast and lunch, but then I purposely keep dinners option because Oaxaca is known for their restaurants. So you can go and just, it awakens your senses. I mean, one of the things I always tell my painters is like, they love fireworks. Like there's fireworks going off all the time. So like your senses are always awake and alive. And if it's not, they'll wake you up. You know, there's music and there's colors and there's sounds and there's smells. And it's just like, you become fully alive, like you become awakened by being there. And then to be in the studio and have that concentrated time that you can focus just on your work is such a gift for women to give themselves. And,
oh, right. Yeah.
You know, the women, I'm really honored, like unbelievably humbled to say that half of the women that are at my retreats always repeat. They always come back. And it's that magical. We just create this wonderful brew together of just healing and empowerment, you know, just so that they can go out and be the artist that they're called to be. And so
great.
It's very nourishing. Thank you.
Very nice. Wow. What a fabulous description of what you do there. And you certainly pack a lot in 1 week.
Yeah. You know, yeah. That's my life. I like to pack it in like sardines.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Wow. Thank you for that great description. And like you said, you've still got a couple of spots left in January, and then you'll open up the classes for November too. So that's great. And Costa Rica, I mean, how exciting is that? What month will that be?
That's in March. And I'm really blessed because that sold out in 24 hours.
Oh,
so
wow. That's wonderful.
That there's a waiting list for that one. And, yeah. It's in the beautiful town of Nosara, which I and my husband and my family, we love, and at a wonderful retreat place that I've been to many times. And this retreat center is in the mountains, really close to the ocean, but you have to go up in the mountains, almost like being in a tree house. And the woman that built it is also an expat. She's living in Costa Rica, and she wanted to create a sacred space. So the entire building and its little homes, like little casitas for people to stay in, as well as a studio and a beautiful kitchen area or dining area, all this beauty and this pool, all this, but everything was created on this sacred geometry from India. And I can't think of the name of it right now, but everything. And you know, when you walk in there, that there was complete intention between the building and the environment and that.
Oh, okay.
And, mm-hmm. and on top of it, it's made in a way that it's in alignment with the stars. Like, it's just incredible that even when you're there, you feel like, that's what I remember when going there. I felt like something's different here. Like, and I remember talking to her and she explained everything. I was like, I feel it. So we get that space all to ourselves and we're all going there to deep dive into our painting again. But this one, which was going to be a little different in my Mexico, is all about understanding the elements of ourselves. Like, because Costa Rica is such an ecosystem of diversity of plants and animals and all that. And when you're there, they come, you know, you'll be in your room and a monkey's walking by your front door,
oh my
you
gosh.
Know? So it's like, we're going to really explore, like, what is the earth of ourselves? What is the
right.
water of ourselves, the air and all of that? And
what is our place here? Yeah.
Yeah. And what is, and how is that in us? And how is that in our art? And that's who we're going to explore. And then all our meals are made for us, you know, like, so they serve us these wonderful meals and it's in a healing space. And then we also get to visit, you know, a lot of the, some tourist options there too. So I'm just so blessed to do the work I am that I do. And the women I get to meet, I can't wait for them. It's like I get to go on vacation with the greatest women that are just doing amazing things and are such big spirits in the world. And so I just want to say thank you to you for allowing me to share this with others, because it's just such a gift to
oh,
do what
welcome.
I do.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. But you know, you've made it happen. You know, you made it happen with your courage and the fact that you're such a multitasker.
Yeah, yeah. I like to do a lot with a lot of stuff.
Right, right. Well, you know, there's thousands of people out there that thank you for that over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was one more thing I wanted to ask you about that I saw on your website. You have a whole section on your website called Free Resources. And there's so much on there, and it's all free, you know, and that's just amazing to me. And I know it's not all about making money, you know, it's making community and making friendships, like you said, and coming back and seeing the same friends every year. But I just feel like you're so generous in what's on there. I hope people are looking at that section of your website, too, because there's a lot of great videos and a lot of great content. Are these things that you offered before for pay and now you're just putting them on there for free, or these are just things you made for yourself? How did all these free resources get there is what I'm trying to say.
Thank you. I'm really like giddy and humbled that you would even say such kind words about it. It's funny because I think there's not enough on there.
Oh gosh. Like, I felt like there was so much.
Oh my gosh. I have plans to think like how I could put more. That's so funny. Thank you for saying that. So there's, I have kind of some ideas about giving away things for free that are my own ideas, I guess. I don't know. But so one of the things I have a newsletter, you know, weekly. I try to make it weekly, and I've just recently started to make my newsletter weekly. It used to be more sporadic, and it used to be just when I had like some and something to offer. And I have a wonderful list of people because I started collecting it when I first started. So I have this wonderful list, and I started to think, you know, I want to use this as an option to like nourish people. And so in the last few months, I've been trying to do what I call a studio log every week. And I send out just kind of like a thoughts of what's happening in my week in my creative practice. But if you sign up for that newsletter, you receive something called my Creative Circle Guidebook. And this is the thing I'm most proud of. And it started years ago as an e-course that was an e-book, but also like an e-course where it started as an e-course where every week I had a teleconference with a different friend of mine. So I interview Heather Pleth, who is like just a superstar on how to hold space. Chris Seidel, who's been facilitating intuitive painting retreats for like ever. Lisa Sonora, who's also been facilitating retreats and, you know, does amazing things in Mexico. I interviewed my lawyer because I thought this is great information for people when they're starting out to have some legal guidance.
And, yeah, so true.
I forgot. I think that's everybody I interviewed. Please forgive me if I'm missing somebody. But and it was an e-course, and so people signed up, and every week we had this teleconference, and the people are talking to us, and I helped them create a way of creating their own creative circles, and that could be anything from, you know, like just sitting around your kitchen table, to actually having retreats in places like Bali or Mexico or whatever. So I wanted to create a guidebook to help more people, more women especially, but anybody can use it to make a resource for them to make this possible. Like if you feel called to do it, here's like, this is all the nuts and bolts and mechanics of the things you really need to do. So get out and do it. And what happened is a few years ago, I remember there was one of the horrible mass shootings in our country that happens too often. And I was just like, we need to get together. And so I just decided I'm going to give away this Creative Circle guidebook for free. Like I want anybody who feels the call to get people together. I don't care if it's around a kitchen table, you know, with your girlfriends and you feel you need some kind of support, I want you to have it. Or if you want to go all the way and make big retreats, I want you to do this. So I just decided then, I was like, forget selling this shit. I'm going to put it out to, excuse my language, but you know, I'm going to just put this out there. It's not shit. I didn't mean to say that. sometimes my mouth's a little dirty, but
that's okay.
I put that out for free since then because I really, I'm really proud of it. It's a really rich e-course, and it's not trying to sell you anything other than just sell you the idea that you can do this and please go out and start. Like this is all, it covers everything from, you know, what to look for in a space. Like I give you checklists and like what to look for, including like, where are the bathrooms? Like things you don't think about, you know, do people need, are they going to need a wheelchair accessible, you know, and things like that. And, does the room have a sink, you know, to also my lawyer was wonderful to give a lot of like legal advice on how to create sacred agreements or contracts with people you work with. And then all the logistics of holding space and putting it together. So my intention has always been to just, the more people that can be out there creating these spaces of getting people in touch with their creativity, the better all of us are. So that's how that came about. And then all the rest of them have just come about, all the other resources on there have just come about by just being fun things to create.
Okay.
And
yeah.
So I just think it's fun. And I am a person that I don't like to, like, I was very conscious that I'm asking this energy exchange of, I would like to have access to your email inbox in exchange for this program, which is my Creative Circle guidebook, because I felt that was a fair exchange of give and take. But in general, I don't like to do, I turn down a lot of things that are like, you know, you can only get this if you sign up or this or that. So that's why I like to give things away for free, because I feel if I really want to give it away for free, I'm going to give it away for free and put it out there. And then if you feel called to join and want to stay connected with me, you can sign up for my email on your own. You're a big girl. I don't need to like trick you into it or manipulate you into it.
And yeah, you didn't want free with strings attached.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Right. So I like to give it without the strings attached.
Yep.
So more people feel access to it as well. Mm-hmm. And actually, my business goal is this upcoming year, I'm hiring more help in my business because I feel I need to have more space where I can actually create more content to give away for free. So if I can bring in more people to help with the business aspect, I can actually put more stuff out there for free, because as part of an artist, like I want to share this stuff. But I'm also clear around my boundaries of what I feel requires an energy exchange. And so I'm also not afraid to charge thousands of dollars for my mentoring program, because it's also a different energy that I bring to my mentoring program that I don't, for instance, you know, I give you my 100% full attention for a year. Well, this is just something on my website.
Right.
So I'm
very different.
Clear about, I have no problem with putting that free stuff out, because it's only, is an invitation for me to create something I'm enjoying creating in the first place. So I'm just sharing my joy in a sense more than anything.
Okay.
And for me, I've been blessed to find my history with creating a business is that I've had good luck sharing my joy, you know, like the more I share of myself, the more I seem to benefit financially. Like the energy exchange seems to always balance out. So I trust that I can give that without the strings attached and be paid back in not just finances, but in community and relationships and just wonderful people of support, you know? And so I take that into consideration when I give them.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I mean, if you were to narrow down the, I guess you'd say like the mission of your business, it seems like the mission of your business has been community from day one, even before it was a business, you know, you know, when you were just doing a blog, you were forming a community.
Well, when I first started the blog, my intention was I want to find people who like will dig my paintings and we can talk about painting. Like that was my whole goal of starting Dirty Footprints Online. And within months I had that, you know, and I had real life friends forming from that. My closest best friends I met through, you know, blogging, and are still friends with them today because, you know, putting myself out there in that way. And I'm lucky to have started a business where I didn't have the gurus out there saying you need to do this and you need to do that.
Right.
I just kept throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what stuck. And then what I have done, and I believe, like, I just, to be honest with you, I'm going to do what I do no matter if I'm getting paid for it or not, no matter if I go to work at a cafe or not. I'm going to do what I do because I've always done what I've done is how I look at it. Mm-hmm. Even when I was young and worked a million different jobs, I can see that I was always doing what I've been doing. And I'm just blessed now to have the experience and time to contain it into a business and make it my career. But I'm going to do this because I believe in what I'm doing. I believe creativity has a real importance and validity and needs to be in our world. And so I'm going to do it no matter if I get paid or not. So to me, that's not a big proponent in my decision making in my work as much, you know. Of course, I understand the relevance that I need, you know, to incorporate monetary energy as well. But
right,
that's kind of how I look at it. So
yeah. It's a great philosophy. It's a great way to live your life. And it's a beautiful, you know, it's a beautiful response to the dark things that are happening in our world right now. And, you know, what you said about in response to another mass shooting, you're doing something beautiful in response. And I think that's great. Yeah. So thank you. Yeah.
I think it's, if you don't mind me saying, I think it's really important because I looked at that shooting and I look at all of the dark things that come across my radar and think, so it's easy for us as artists to think, well, we can't do anything. Mm-hmm. And so instead of me saying, I can't do anything, I say, well, what can I do?
Right.
And at that time I thought, well, what I can do is I can offer some support for people that might want to pull people together. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And maybe I can't draw the direct line on how that might, you know, maybe there are no direct lines on how that's going to impact those that are suffering from something as a mass shooting or the horrible destructions and horrors we see in the world, but it's making a ripple effect in some way or another. And, you know, can I share this if you don't mind? Like, years ago, Stamping Tin Magazine, I think that's what they're called, or Somerset Magazine.
Somerset Studio.
Please forgive me. They had a call out. They were going to do a Fearless issue. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, I gotta be in it because I teach Fearless painting. So I wrote this little something and I sent it in and they, you know, I don't remember the process, but they're like, you're going to be in it. And then at last minute, they didn't put me in the Fearless magazine and they put me in something else and they made a bunch of mistakes. Right?
Oh, no.
Yeah, and at the time I was really angry about it because I was just like, I was so disappointed and I was kind of angry that they made these kind of really ridiculous mistakes and I had this kind of sour feeling about it, but then I let it go. And about a year or two later, it was my friend Heather Plath, and she was in somewhere really like far north in Canada, and I don't remember exactly, so I'm butchering it a little bit, but she was on retreat or teaching a retreat, and she walked into some random studio of an artist, and they were hosting a little like get together, a little circle for artists that were together. And they were beginning their circle and they were reading my article. They read my article as their way of opening their circle all the time.
Oh boy.
And she sent me this picture. And it opened my eyes in a huge way because I was like, we have no idea when we put something out as artists. We have no idea what happens to it. and who it impacts. We have no, like, you know, like, never in my wildest dreams could I imagine that that little article would be a weekly prayer for people that are in, like, so remote from where I even knew existed. And so my intention for putting free stuff out or pouring that is in alignment with that ripple that I have to trust that I don't know the bigger picture. You know?
Yeah. And so you're making an impact. You're making an impact whether you know it or not, and you don't need to know for it to really be good. If that makes sense. You know, you were doing that article was doing good for those people in Canada, whether you knew about it or not.
And I couldn't control that. How could I control that?
You know, our impact can go on for years. And, you know, that's the thing we have to remember. That's our legacy. And there's no accolades for the legacy. You know, we're not getting a gold star or a blue ribbon because we did that. But the other people are getting something. They're getting something from you.
You're right. And we live in a culture that's seeped in urgency. So there's this constant urgency that has to happen now. We need to know now. We need to see it now. And so I think one of the parts of being an artist is like really realizing that our work, no matter if we are creating creative circles and retreats or we're just creating art in our own studio for just ourselves, that there is a larger story being woven with our decision to focus our time on creativity instead of destruction or horror or hate or greed. We have a choice as artists, and we choose creativity over choosing those other options, and we choose it consciously, which I feel puts that out into the world in some way or another. And I love when I have those little reminders like that article to like slap me back and be like, you know, get out of your own way, Connie. Like, it's not all up to you to make this stuff happen. So I like to give that free stuff away is kind of my little like tango with the universe. Like, I'll do this. Now you kind of like do your part and just make sure we have food on the table every week and I'm good.
Yeah. You know, so. I don't ask for much. I just need some food.
Yeah, some food and a few trips to Costa Rica and Mexico, and we're good. Oh, and a lot of happy women. I just want happy, healthy, empowered women. That's all I want.
Yep. Well, I think you've accomplished that. So I think many people thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think we'll end with this, but I want to, I mean, what a great interview. Thank you for this conversation. I would like you to just say out loud, what is your website where people can find you?
You can Google Dirty Footprints Studio, but if you want the web address, it's dirtyfootprints-studio.com.
Okay. All right. And where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at Dirty Footprints.
Okay.
And you can find me on Facebook at Dirty Footprints Studio.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. And so I'll put links to all of this on the show notes for the episode. So everybody be sure and just look up the Connie Solera episode number and you can find all this. And I'll also put links to different portions of your website and just kind of point out where you can find your retreats and the free things, resources that we were talking about too. So thank you so much, Connie. This has been wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you for opening the space for me to share my work. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
It's been really fun. Thank you. What a great conversation. Connie is so inspiring and so giving with her art knowledge and techniques. I feel like she really went deep when she was talking about putting creativity out into the world, whether it's in the form of art retreats or online classes or all her free resources. This was such a good talk. I've got an extra long list of great takeaways from this episode. First of all, number one, when thinking about going to art school after high school, consider going to a college that offers a wide range of classes so you can learn more than just art. Number two, as an artist, you have to listen to your inner voice and don't just do what you think people expect you to do. Number three, if people ask if you teach and you think it's something you'd like to do, then just say yes and start a class at your own home or a shop or wherever you can find a space. Number four, trust your process. If it doesn't feel right, don't do it. Number five, use how Connie worked her blog years ago to utilize social media today. Comment on other people's posts, follow them, create daily content, and create and share videos. Number six, Don't wait until you have a template as a sample to try something new. Connie created an online course before she'd even taken one because she felt that she could reach so many more people that way. Number 7. If you want to learn something, don't be afraid to reach out to other artists and ask them what they do. Connie did this when she reached out to 30 artists and she interviewed them. This became her art journal love letters. Number 8. Sometimes you need to just put something on your calendar and then figure out the details later. Number 9. Don't look at a fail as a fail. Look at it as an opportunity to try something new. Number 10. Find your relationship with risk. Number 11. When you want to do something that's new and risky, think about what the best thing is that can happen if you do it, and then also the worst thing that can happen if you do it. Then you'll probably realize that the worst thing really wouldn't be so bad. Number 12. If you want advice on whether you should do something, don't bring it to the masses. Only talk with the people that you can trust and are further on in their art business than you. Number 13. As artists, we are choosing to put creativity rather than destruction or hate out there. And number 14, this is a direct quote from Connie. Creativity has an importance and a validity, and it needs to be in our world. I hope you've enjoyed hearing Connie talk about 21 Secrets and her online classes and destination retreats. Be sure and check out my show notes for this episode on my website at suzanneredmond.com, because I've included great photos of Connie's artwork and her retreats. I've included links to her Dirty Footprint Studio, as well as lots of other things we discussed. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please go on iTunes and leave me a review. And thank you for listening to the Left Brain Artist podcast. I'm Suzanne Redmond. See you next time.